And I would first of all like to thank the organizing committee for having me here today as one of the speakers. I'm very excited to be here. I'm also extremely jet-lagged, so Rachel has promised to wake me up if I fall asleep during my presentation. I would also like to take the opportunity to thank the FIAF, especially for making the topic of this Sydney Congress a legal one, because as a legal officer, I don't usually get the chance to travel anywhere else but Brussels, Belgium. And now there's, of course, Nicola, nothing wrong with Belgium, but you don't have koalas. And you don't have deadly spiders either. And I'm very much looking forward to them. There we go. First of all, some shameless PR on my side. Needs to be done. For those of you who haven't been in Amsterdam in recent years, I would like to show you what our beautiful building looks like nowadays. That's the one obviously on the left, which is finished. That's our museum building on the northern bank of the River Eye in Amsterdam. And on the right, the building pit will soon be our collection center. It's under construction, as you can obviously see. It should be finished by the end of the year. We hope to be able to get into it early next year. It will house not only all our collections, except for the nitrate, but also the collection department and our information center. So that was the shameless PR. There we go. Well, as the title of my presentation suggests, I would like to present you with some more practical solutions to legal hurdles encountered by film archives when trying to fulfill their public missions, in particular opening up their collections to the public. Now, I should stress here that my presentation is really from a lawyer point of view and not necessarily a film archivist. So I might have some different perspectives than film archivists. The first sort of general solution I would offer, and this is really a favorite one of mine, is stretching existing copyright exceptions. I like to do this on a day-to-day basis. My colleagues usually are very happy when I say, yes, you can use it. What I would suggest is that you check your national copyright law, find any exception and limitation you can find. There might be a bit more than you might think at first. And after that, you stretch them as far as you can. I have an example here of something that we did at I. On the left, you see our temporary information center. And the exception here is the archives, libraries, and museums are allowed to show to individual members of the public via dedicated terminals on their premises works from their collection, without the need to ask permission from a rights holder. Now, obviously, the left picture is what it's intended for. What the stretching part is the pots you see on the right. These are in our museum building. And you can see two people sitting in there. What you don't see is that there's also a screen that you see movies on. And it's a sort of an interactive way. It's a fun way to watch movies in our building, and it's for free, by the way. Obviously, it's not really a dedicated terminal, I would say, and it's not really for educational or research purposes either, but we use the films in those pots without asking permission, and no rights holders come forward or complain, so it worked. And I would really like to advise you to be bold when stretching. It usually works and you're fine. If it doesn't work, my other suggestion would be to seek out relevant stakeholders and try to reach an agreement. This can be applied, of course, to a whole variety of legal problems, but I would like to highlight a few examples here, two from our big digitization project, Images for the Future, and one concerning a legal deposit, which, as you will find out, we don't have in Holland, but we have our own little system. So first of all, a bit of background on Images for the Future. I think Some of you might have heard of it. It was a huge project. It ran from 2007 until 2012. It was supposed to run until 2014, but unfortunately our government pulled the plug on us. But still, we got 24 million euros out of the total budget of 115, which is considerable for a small country, as the Netherlands is. And this allowed us to digitize 7,500 titles, which amounts to 3,874 hours of film, which is quite considerable, I should say. And we also managed, in the framework of this project, to clear a lot of titles. Clearing, in a sense, not really getting permission from every rights holder to every title cleared, but more assessing the rights status. And out of those 7,090 films cleared, 483 were deemed public domain, and a whopping 2,479 were orphan works. Now, the clearing was a necessary part of the project because the aim of the whole thing was not just digitizing, but also opening up this digitized content to the public and, strangely enough, generate income. Because initially, what our government asked from us was that we would get revenue with the digitized content so we could pay them back part of the subsidy. Somewhere halfway through the project, it was recognized that this would never happen because there's no way in hell that you can make millions with archival content. So luckily for us, this demand was abandoned. But in the beginning, we had to take it into account because then it was still valid. So in order to fulfill those two aims, we decided, together with the other project partner, big project partner, the Dutch TV Archive, to create a VOD platform. And we were joined by the Dutch Association of Feature Film Producers. It was really good to have them aboard because obviously we needed them and it made life much easier. I have to add a sour note here, because although this VOD platform had a promising start, sort of went dead early last year. But that doesn't mean that the solutions that generated out of it are any less worthy or viable. Okay, so the problems we encountered when we started this VOD platform was, first of all, of course, we needed the permission from the rights holders. And that's a painstakingly process because there is no one-stop shop. I don't think any country has that to clear rights in films. We don't have extended collective licensing in the Netherlands. And there was also no budget to pay the rights holders up front, so we couldn't buy them out. And the solution to this problem we found in a system of voluntary extended collective licensing, an agreement between archives, producers, and collecting societies. Now, the concept, or the highlights of the concept you see here, I did the search for the rights holders. We entered into license agreements only with the producers. And for any other rights holders that there might be, such as directors or whatever, we had a collective license agreement with 5 representative CMOs that I will show you in the next slide. And of course, in the process of searching for rights holders, we came up with all sorts of errors and all sorts of possible rights holders, we provided the CMOs with the contact information on those people that we found so they could do the repartition. Well, these are our Dutch CMOs that were involved in the deal. Music, obviously, writers, neighboring rights, directors and producers. I should just add to the confusion because producers here they're for the main rights, but for their other neighboring rights they might have, because for their main rights they entered into the license agreement with us. So what did this deal exactly entitle? Those CMOs gave the platform permission for exploitation for the works of their members, and they gave an exoneration for claims for members and non-members. And I just have to check here. And the exoneration for non-members was up to the maximum amount a member would have received. So there was a max there. Members could opt out if they didn't agree with the money offered. And the repartition was quite interesting. Out of every sale that the VOD platform made, a 10% of top went to the CMOs collectively, and they divided that money between them set to according to a set percentage. Of the remaining 90%, 35% was running costs of the platform, so the platform didn't actually make any profit, and 65% for the licensor of the VOD rights, which was the producer. And interestingly enough, that 10% also went to public domain and orphan works. Oh, really? Oh, dear. Okay. And the second problem that we encountered was that we needed permission to digitize. There is an exception in Dutch copyright law which allows preservation, but only if the work is falling apart or it's an obsolete format. Digitizing just for the sake of digitizing is not allowed without the rights holder's permission. And there was, of course, still the additional demand for income. We came up with a digitization agreement. I should probably go through this rather quickly. Importantly, of course, is that the copies made and paid by us remained our property. And here is the unique part in this agreement. The rights holder can buy copies from us in all sorts of formats. But if they or a third party with their permission exploit these copies, we get a contribution towards our costs made. And this is based not on the actual digitization costs, but on the length of the film in question and the base material that was used by us for the digitization. And what happens is every time a rights holder sells his work or makes money in some way, we get 50% of their income for that sale until that amount of money that they owe us is paid back. And after the digitization costs have been repaid, they owe us for preservation costs. And there it's the actual costs, but there the percentage is lower. They owe us 15% of any sale. This looks a bit like what Nicola mentioned yesterday, the principles set in the Licenses for Europe scheme. It's a bit different. Of course, this agreement was already in place when Licenses for Europe started. The contract we use can be used for all sorts of films, in and out of commerce, amateur, and we can conclude the agreement with all types of right holders, including heirs. And the digitization agreement itself doesn't give any right to us for exploitation, so we enter into separate agreements for that with rights holders. And the advantage, of course, if we do the exploitation ourselves, is that we can retain the money they owe us immediately. Now, as my time is up, unfortunately, I can't get to a really interesting part. Huh? Okay, quickly. Yeah. Yeah, of course, I kept the best for last. Our voluntary legal deposit system. I'm not sure I can do this in 2 minutes, but basically, because we don't have legal deposit and we do want every Dutch film in the best possible format for our archive, we have entered into agreement with our film fund in the Netherlands, which is completely independent from us, by the way. And they put a clause in the contracts that they closed with the filmmakers that apply for a subsidy, in which it's stated that the filmmaker needs to donate material to us. And we then negotiate with them what format we want so we get the best digital formats available. And the incentive for them to actually give it to us, because, of course, we are not part of that agreement, so we can't hold them to anything, is that as in, like I think Thomas told yesterday, as in with real legal deposit, there's a money incentive. They don't get their last installment from the fund unless they can produce a declaration that we give them. And we only give them that if after we've checked the material and seen that it is complete and in good order. Well, almost made it. I'll spare you the conclusion, but... okay. Well, it's just to encourage people to be creative and, like I said at the beginning, stretch existing limitations and exceptions, and where this is not enough, seek out relevant stakeholders, and you might achieve more than you think. Thank you.